Hang in there, it is.
Smiley Kaufman for 61. Wow.
I'm Smiley Kaufman, and this is The Smiley Show.
Welcome back to another episode of The Smiley Show. And Smiley, this is one I'm fired up about because we just got maybe the best Sunday leaderboard we've had all season long. It was not in a major. It was not in a PGA Tour event. It was in the Olympics. Just a fantastic, even though it was a limited field sort of situation, fantastic set of names at the top of the leaderboard. I'm Charlie Hume. He's, of course, Smiley Kaufman. I'm on the road visiting the in-laws, joining you from my father-in-law's basement bar here. I could just tap you a beer right here behind me if you're watching on YouTube, should you like that. Lots to get to because, you know, many of you might have seen that I shot 66, no big deal, you know, post that on Instagram this weekend. And I just backed it up today with a cool 83. So we are all the way back. And we will, if we have time at the end of this episode, we will get into the 66 or the 83, really whichever direction Smiley wants to go. But the place where we must start this episode is another Scottie Scheffler win this year. We came off last week talking about where we stand in the whole Xander Scottie player of the year race. And this feels like it's almost put to bed with Scottie winning gold and really kind of taking the reins on Sunday. So, Smiley, let's just start there. We were both watching this. We were texting the entire day. Scottie makes this charge on the back nine to shoot 62 to win a gold medal. How did Scottie get it done today?
Man, it's a great question because, you know, when I think most of America on the East Coast or Central Time, they woke up and they see the leaderboard and they see John Rahm as at 20 under par. He's got a 4-shot lead. And you're like, all right, I'll go turn it on just to kind of see how well he's actually playing and see if anybody, you know, tries to make it somewhat interesting. And then within 20, 30 minutes, this thing just got as juicy as any golf tournament that we have had this entire year outside of maybe the US Open, because this leaderboard, like you said, it was epic. You know, from you just look down from the first place all the way down to 15th place. It just, it was so packed in because the scoring was so low, soft greens, no wind, but still a golf course that was very penal if you were offline or you miss hit shots. So bogeys and doubles were in play, which I think if you're a viewer, this was the epitome of what you want to watch, because you got birdies flying everywhere. You got an awesome leaderboard. You have these names that you're excited to watch, but also you see guys getting penalized when they do hit bad shots. So a really fun morning to watch golf. Scottie Scheffler obviously going out and shooting a 62. He's at 10 under par to start the day. Xander Schauffele at 14 under. I believe it was John Rahm was at 13 and then Tommy Fleetwood was at 14. I don't know if I flip-flop these two, but
I believe we had Xander and Rahm at 14 to begin the day. Okay. Scottie at 10, Tommy at 13.
There you go. Well, you know, it was such an interesting round, right? Because, you know, with John Rahm, he's a guy that, you know, he hasn't had too many rounds where you just feel like when he gets the lead, he goes and finishes out the job. So I think that was, you know, a lot of people's first impressions when they turned it on. They're like, oh, this is kind of weird. Is Rahm going to blow this? And next thing you know, it's like Scottie is just kind of surging, and it kind of, you really felt it after he got up and down on 14 left in this like heavy rough that we saw multiple players get into. And Hideki was one of them who ended up winning the bronze. And then John Rahm, after he bogeyed the 11th hole, he bogeys the 12th hole, misses their fairway at 14, a hole in which is a par five that most of the guys, Charlie, have been birdieing this hole. And John Rahm's got 7-iron this green. He hooks it left, hits it into that left rough, chips it short of the green, chips it up, makes double bogey. Meanwhile, Scottie up on the same hill hits this beautiful, from this terrible looking lie, bump shot into the hill to a foot, makes birdie. And that was kind of the start of it from my perspective.
Yeah, I mean, I think that 14th hole is where it all turns, right? I mean, yep. I think that you've listed so many things there that I think are worth digging into. The drama of this course. I mean, I was trying to not be too much of a prisoner of the moment and saying, wow, this is really producing some top tier, high end, low end moments, and just keeping guys in the mix with the opportunities to make birdie. But also, there are a lot of holes where you can make some big numbers, as you noted. But, you know, and I think I want to get into the course. I want to get into the event. I want to unpack I mean, as a guy who picked John Rahm to one and done this week and was on the cusp of five wins this season and a gold medal and was just ready to kind of fly the banner for my impeccable picking, that was a heartbreaker. I want to get into how that all collapsed for him. But to continue on the Scotty theme, talking a little bit about him in final rounds this year, because I know this is something that you're really interested in. To me, the comparison I kept drawing in my own head was what happened at the Players' Championship, mm-hmm. where he comes into the day, he's five shots off Xander, he's four shots off Wyndham, and he just starts creeping on the back nine, making birdie after birdie, just kind of catching up. And obviously, I mean, I think for that to work out, you have to have guys at the top of the leaderboard who are giving shots away or just not, yeah. you know, making more birdies totally. And kind of creeping back into it. But it just, he has this, I don't want to call it Tiger-esque yet, because so many times we've drawn these Tiger Scotty comparisons, and Tiger's, you know, stats are just otherworldly when you look at what he was doing in his prime. But it's just that sense of Scotty's out there. He's got some momentum. He's making mm-hmm. some birdies. Maybe I'm getting a little bit nervous if I have a lead, and lo and behold, here he is, you know, making birdies coming down the stretch, and he's got the number posted that everyone needs to chase and they can't make it there. So a little bit of, I'm just curious to hear your thoughts on Scotty and final rounds this year.
Well, I think Tiger-esque, the way you frame that, I think the way I see it is that he has an elite awareness right now of what it's going to take on a Sunday. And he's proven it multiple times this year to win from behind. He's won with being a part of the mix and be able to separate. But he's also, you know, understood when he's out in front, hey, this is what we watched Tiger do as kids, right? When he got the lead, it was game over. And Scotty's proven that he's been able to do that this year. And Jack Nicklaus, you know, all the greats have been really great at understanding exactly what a good score is that day. And I just wanted to dig in a little bit into final rounds for Scottie Scheffler this year and weeks that he has won. And what started Bay Hill, final round 66, it was the lowest score by two shots. Player is a 64. You already mentioned it. That was a four horse race with Wyndham, Xander, Harm, I put Harm twice. I know there was somebody else, though. It was Wyndham, Harm, and
I'm looking right here. I'm looking at the leaderboard, and it was, well, I'll just kind of read you from the bottom up with the players. Ludwig finished 8th at 14 under. Tom Kim and Hideki Matsuyama both T6 at 15 under. Matt Fitzpatrick was in the race there at 16 under. Then you had Harmon, Shoffley, Clark finished at 19 under, and of course Scotty at 20. A lot of legit, you know, proven winners at the top of that leaderboard. Exactly. Scotty comes out on top.
Well, he shot a 60, let's see, a 64 that day, and then the lowest of that group was a 68. So four better than the group that was chasing him. And then the Masters, 68. That was the lowest round that day. I don't think we talk about that he actually got crystal for the lowest score when he's out in front. So that's another one to consider for, you know, being out in front or being really in the mix too that day. There was a lot of guys kind of around it, but he was able to go out and shoot a 68. Hilton Head, I thought, was interesting too, because that was a really weird day. A lot of starts and stops. I had to go out and finish on Monday. Shot a 68 that day, but if you go and look at the leaderboard, you'll see that, oh, he didn't really go as low as quite as other guys, but other guys were able to finish before the storms came. He came out that next day in a north wind. It's blowing 20, 30 miles an hour. It's like 15 to 20 degrees colder. So that was a tough one to kind of for a leader. It's easy to get out in front of yourself, and Scotty was able to keep one foot in front of the other, sleep on a weird type of Sunday, finish on a Monday, and still go out and win. Memorial, I think, is a great example of what we watch Tiger and the greats do, is get a lead, get out in front, and on a really hard golf course like the Memorial was, which is, I think, maybe the hardest golf course we saw this entire year, out on a Sunday where the scoring average was close to 74, 75, 76. He goes out and shoots 74, and it was enough to win by a shot over Colin Morikawa. A Travelers Championship. This is now we're starting to get into, okay, he's won on every test. You got Bay Hill, which is a firm golf course, so you got to be so dialed in. He was so good that day. Players in a coming from behind fashion. Masters, everything on the line, but he's got chasers and a really tough golf course. Hilton Head was crazy. Memorial was hard. But Travelers, this is the one I think was almost the most impressive to show what type of range that Scotty has now, which is this golf golf course, everybody was shooting the lights out of it. You know, he shot 65 or 64 every single day. And on Sunday, he shoots a 65. And honestly, he made the putts that we felt like he wasn't going to be able to keep up and make on a Sunday. So that was impressive from him. And then let's look at the Olympics, which we just saw today, and a final round 62, a 29 on the back nine. And now you look at that, all of that that I just talked about and all of his wins this year. And you're like, you know what? He's proven that he can do it in all ways. And I think that is what has defined Scottie Scheffler this year and the adjustments that he's made into learning how to win. I think him and Ted Scott, they just keep getting better and better. Scottie has a better awareness. Ted has a better understanding of how to slow Scottie down a little bit because he can get a little fiery and angry. But I mean, I just thought it was really interesting going back and looking at, you know, all of his wins this year, especially on Sundays.
Well, and I think if you were trying to dig deep and formulate a criticism of Scottie or a question of, you know, how high can he extend his greatness, the criticism in years past has been, is he just a February, March, April guy? And now you just hit a lot of key points there where it's like, he's very much not that, you know, the wins later in the season. He now has a major win this season at the Masters, 6 wins on tour, which I believe off top, he's got Masters players. And I think it's 4 signature event wins. So all very elite fields. And then now he's got a gold medal. And so you're seeing a different version of him this year.
So
the
good.
The putting is obviously the thing that we all talk about, the switch to that spider, and all the success he's seen since then.
Yep.
But just, and you kind of hit on it there a little bit. You put a tweet out earlier just talking about his willingness to kind of evolve as the round goes on. And, mm-hmm. and you know, one thing he'd done this year is he'd read more of his own putts instead of bringing Ted Scott in, but then made some adjustments in the middle of the Olympics and brought Ted in more and kind of rode that process out all the way to a gold medal. What differences have you seen from 2023 to 2024 in Scottie's game? And are they all putting related, or do you see some that are beyond that?
Well, I'm just going to use the Players Championship and the Olympics as an example, because that's kind of how we started this conversation, of very similar in the way in which he won these events. And when you look at the final 18 holes, we can point out the birdies. What I see were all of the pars that he had are just easy, easy pars, stress-free. He referenced like a nice par putt he made on the 13th hole today, but just not having to grind over, you know, 10 footers for par 2 or 3 or 4 times around. What he's able to do is he makes the hard holes look really easy. He gives himself birdie looks where other guys are, you know, giving themselves either par tap-ins or lengthy par looks. Not many guys like Scottie over and over again can play the 8th hole at the Players Championship and have a legitimate birdie look. But that's the type of shots and the high quality shots that Scottie Scheffler is able to hit throughout a round. And when it comes to just what the difference is, I think the easy pars is one. But the putter, like you mentioned, is another. So he's got confidence in that. And, you know, I don't mind having Ted come in and read putts, especially when you look at the Open Championship. And if you watch Scottie at all that week, you just saw him just constantly just head up in the air, just hands on the face. Like, are you kidding me? I can't buy a putt. He's got the same reacts every time.
It's like the, I can't believe it.
But, you know, Charlie, when I think about this event and why I think it's so impressive, and he talked about this in his press conference, and that these leaderboards aren't like the PGA Tour leaderboards. Like he talked about that, you know, it's not like you can just stare at the leaderboard and the front page is right there. He said, if there's 60 seconds where you're staring at the leaderboard, he said that maybe 5 to 10 seconds, the first page is actually there. So on Sunday, he said it was really difficult, or I say today, it was very difficult for him to know exactly where he stood in the golf tournament. So when you kind of look at his back nine and what he was able to do and just, you know, keep one foot in front of the other, I think when he saw John Rahm at 20 under, you know, that is where a player like himself would know, all right, I'm just going to stay aggressive, keep trying to go and make birdies. And if he opens the door, I'm going to jump through it. And I think that's the impressive part about Scottie this year is that I feel like last year it was more about, oh gosh, how is he not won this golf tournament, because he's right there in the mix. Because every time it's not that he was putting enough pressure from the back. It was more that he was in the mix and then just kind of wasn't able to make that clutch birdie here or there last year is what it felt like. And this year, I feel like he's had a better awareness of where he is in the tournament and no better situation than the 17th hole today. So the 14th and the 17th, I felt like were the key moments. 15 and 16 were obviously epic shots he hit, but 17, you know, he drives it left into the rough and plays this awesome, just high fade out of a ball above his feet, out of the rough. Very difficult to you know, keep enough spin on this golf ball to where it just doesn't jump over the green. Similar to what we saw with Tommy Fleetwood. He hits right on the front of the green, rolls out to 20 feet. He buries the putt. And it's the first time that you watch Scottie Scheffler make a putt from that 15 to 20 foot range, which we've always talked about. It's like, if he just make one of those or one of those around, like that's going to be enough for him to win golf tournaments. And he did it on the 71st hole of the Olympics and just let out this roar that you're just like, yeah, Scotty, come on, baby, let's go. And that's kind of what we're looking for from this alpha dog competitor that, you know, that I think a lot of people just don't realize, you know, we're looking at a really historic season that Scotty's putting together and a historic run really that he ain't done yet is from my perspective.
No, he is not. And he still has the whole FedEx Cup playoffs before him. And I think we look back at the season, obviously with a major one at the Masters and then a big asterisk on what happened in Louisville with being arrested, still finishing top 10 and what could have been there for him. And then we went to a place in Pinehurst where he was clearly very uncomfortable with the way that course was set up and said as much in his press conferences. And then the Open was, you know, kind of very draw dependent, but sort of an interesting one. So I think there was a partial reaction to his season of saying, man, I wonder what could have been. But seeing him win gold here, and obviously looking forward to what he is going to do in the weeks to come, you know, we could still be looking at a very historic season. And again, only the beginning for Scottie Scheffler. Shifting over now to that final group of Jon Rahm, Xander Schauffele, Tommy Fleetwood. I mean, you and I have a shared note where we kind of jot down our observations and kind of formulate what we're going to talk about when we recap tournaments at the end of the day. And I was taking a victory lap very early of like, hey, how are we evaluating Jon Rahm's season now that he didn't do well in any majors, had to withdraw from one, but he's got a gold medal and, you know, he can still win a LIV individual championship. Like, can we call this a success? And that was probably around maybe the 11th, 12th, 13th hole. He did not even end up on the podium, just makes double at 14. A really spectacular implosion. And yeah, Scotty had to go out and do what he did on that back nine to go out and win it. But I just, this season for Jon Rahm doesn't make any sense at all to me. And yeah, of course he could go out and win an individual championship on LIV, win a team championship on LIV and look back and say there was some degree of success that was had. But I just wonder what stock you take after another near miss and one where he was in the driver's seat and we expect him in those situations to finish those things out. That's his, you know, MO. Like these are situations where he thrives.
Oh, totally. And he's going to get scrutinized more now that he's made the jump to LIV. So any situation where, you know, if John, like he did today, was not able to close it out, it's going to, you know, people are always just going to say, you know what, if he had more reps of closing out tournaments that matter, then he would have closed this one out. I don't know if I look at it from that lens quite as much as other people, because he is getting reps, he is playing golf, but is it to the level of what it was like today? I don't know. I think it was just a little bit of nerves, to be honest. I think he got a little out in front of himself. The chip shot, I think, on the 12th hole, which is uncharacteristic. It was not a very difficult looking shot. D-cell, not committed. And then the 14th hole looks like just a bit of an error with the 7-iron, not leaving it out to the right, going and making par. I think got a little too aggressive and then missing a putt, you know, that, you know, it's a 3.5 footer for a bogey. I know he probably was fuming at that point before he even missed, but you still got to make sure you make that putt to where, you know, you give yourself an opportunity to find yourself on the medal stand. And what's kind of crazy when you look at the final 8 holes of Scotty's day and Jon Rahm's day is that Scotty beat Jon Rahm by 10 shots on the last 8 holes. That is alarming. I mean, I know anything can happen on this back nine, but it was probably the easiest that golf course is ever going to play. It's soft greens, no wind. It's very challenging. Like, you have to hit really good shots, but still, for John Rahm, who's already played, you know, just he's got 9 more holes left in the tank, and all he's got to do is just, you know, just not blow up pretty much, and you're going to be right there. It's very shocking to see, especially I think not winning is a whole one thing, but not ending up on the medal stand was something that was absolutely shocking from when I turned the TV on to when the golf tournament was over.
Yeah, it is. When you put it like that, he beat him by 10 shots on that back nine. It's inexplicable. I mean, especially for, it'd be one thing if, you know, we saw a brilliant finish from Victor Perez today, but let's say there's someone who's playing in front of their home crowd and feeling that emotion too, and carrying a lead, and maybe hasn't won a major or a huge event. That's a different sort of thing. For Rahm, we've seen him there multiple times, and we've seen him close and finish it. So that was shocking in a lot of ways. And I don't know. I think it's one of those seasons where you're going to kind of round up with your team and take stock and say, how do we do it a lot different next year? Because this was supposed to be a sort of breakout, you know, I'm now the face of LIV. I'm going to, you know, contend in some majors, maybe win a major and really kind of make my stamp in this new league. And we really haven't seen that in the commingled events, at least this year. Another one in that final group where you're talking about back nine scoring, I think Xander shot either a 38 or a 39 on the back and finishes 2 over for the day, 12 over for the tournament. Also did not, I mean, 12 under, I'm sorry, for the tournament, also not on the medal stand from a guy that was playing in that final group. And in a similar vein, in our shared note, you know, we were talking about Scotty Xander player of the year. How does this change if Xander wins silver and Scotty doesn't medal? You know, is there an argument to be made there if Xander goes out and plays well in the playoffs, plays well at Eastlake, maybe wins the FedEx Cup? You know, does he have an argument? And I'm not saying he can't still go out and play well in those events, but after watching that sort of reversal of fates on the back nine in the Olympics, I just wonder what to make of the day for Xander when it's really right now, it's him and Scotty. I mean, these are the two guys that are the elites in pro golf right now. And it was just kind of wild to see a guy like that do what he did on that back nine today.
You know, I think that's you frame that perfectly, because it is the two guys that you kind of think about. You think about, you know, Scotty obviously is the alpha dog, but in that final group, you look to Rahm and you look to Xander Schauffele to having really good days. And so it was really surprising, right? We already talked about John Rahm, but Xander wasn't that much better. He was 4 over his final 7 holes, which they're very uncomfortable golf holes. Let's not make it out to be these simple, easy shots. I mean, they were, it's not easy, but guys of their caliber can make it look very easy. And there were two shots for Xander that let him down on the back nine. And it was a iron shot that he hit in the water out of the left rough. I believe it was on the 13th hole. And so he makes a bogey. I believe it was a bogey there. It was actually kind of hard to follow Xander on the back nine. They weren't showing him a whole lot. So I'm doing all this based on just memory here. But with Xander also, I mean, I was told that he hit it in the water as well on the 15th hole with an iron. So he hit 2 iron shots in the water, one being from the rough. And I assume the other one was from the fairway, even though I didn't see it. So that to me is, you know, for Xander, he was right there, right? He was at 16 under par. He was only, you know, 3 shots back heading into that back nine, and just not really, showing up on that back nine. Maybe it's just a little bit of, maybe just a little tired. I don't know. It just some days you don't have it. Maybe today was one of those days he didn't have it. We're definitely not going to question Xander's ability to close, because guess what? We just saw that a couple of weeks ago at the Open Championship, closing on a Sunday where, you know, exactly like today, where Scotty just went out and he was the best, just proved that he was the best golfer in the world. And Xander showed that a couple of weeks ago that he also can contend with that notion that he can be the best player in the world.
Yeah, I think with Xander, we've seen enough now. I mean, there were certainly questions asked of him prior to winning 2 majors this year about his ability to close and win a tournament or win a big event. But we're at the place now where sometimes you have an off day. And, you know, I think that for him, it's you know, that could be the case. And there's maybe more forgiveness right now for a guy like Xander with his resume this year than a guy like John Rahm, who we're just waiting for him to do something or anything this year in a big event. And he's coming down the stretch here and you're thinking, this could be it. Like, this could be him making an impact this season. He gives it away in the fashion that he did, even though he played relative to Xander better than Xander today. You know, it's an interesting sort of scenario.
Well, I guess why we're wide on Xander's. Guess what? The guy won two major championships this year. And I still even think when you look at Xander's resume to this point this year and Scotty's, I think by far, like, no brainer, Scotty Scheffler's going to win player of the year. But if you polled the players and say, which one would you pick between the two? I think it would be very, very close in the voting. I think it'd be a 50-50 on guys being like, well, you know, careers and legacies are defined by majors. So anytime you can get two in the same season, I think a lot of guys would side on that side. But then you look at, man, he's made, what, $30 million. He's won six times in a gold medal, seven being that gold medal win. I think it's a debate. A lot of players would be like, I don't know. But I think from just a player of the year perspective, to me, it's now a no-brainer who should win. But I don't know. Who would you be taking in that argument, Charlie?
I mean, it's not bad to go walk into your trophy room and go look at a Wanamaker trophy and a Claire jug. I mean, there are worse things you could be going to look at. So I think that it's an interesting career legacy thing. And I think it's that debate in and of itself, you know, took on a new life, despite the fact that Scotty, it seemed ludicrous prior to Xander's Open win to even suggest such a thing. But, you know, there's something there. It's, you know, it's Xander double stamping. A lot of people called the legitimacy of his PGA championship win into question, given the conditions of Valhalla, and maybe fairly so. But to go and stamp that with a win in the conditions we saw at Royal Troon, definitely convincing. And yeah, I think Scotty ends up winning player of the year. But Xander, I think it's amazing where the way we viewed him, even at the beginning of this year, where he's in the final round at the Genesis with Cantlay and kind of lays an egg, and you're like, man, is this guy ever going to get it done in a big event in convincing fashion? Again, with Rory kind of down the stretch of the Wells Fargo, and then, you know, turns around and wins the PGA, whatever, a week later, the way he did. So, you know, I think he gets a little bit of a pass here, even though, yeah, it was a shocker of a Sunday for him, especially on that back nine. The third guy in that group, Tommy Fleetwood, who ends up on the podium with silver. I kind of want to play it forward a little bit with Tommy in a way, because he has a great day today, shoots 66, you know, the guy that played the best in that final grouping. I remember a couple of years ago when Will Zalatoris had a couple of near misses at majors and in big events, and we were just wondering, when is Will Zalatoris going to win a tour event for the first time? And I look at Tommy playing great here, ending up on the podium, having a lot of confidence rolling into the FedEx Cup playoffs. I'm curious, do you think this is, you know, in the same fashion that Will Zalatoris goes out and wins the FedEx St. Jude a couple years ago, now he has all the back issues on the back end of that, that's separate. But just, do you think this sets Tommy up to maybe go out, play well in the playoffs, win one of these events? And do you like him at, you know, better at TPC Southwind, Castle Pines, or East Lake, you know, than another venue?
You know, I haven't probably dug into that enough. I mean, I feel like when you're playing good golf, it doesn't really matter where you're playing. You know, the scores are gonna show up. And Tommy is really, you know, the Olympics this week and how well he's played at this golf course at Le Golf National. I mean, this should be Tommy. He should try to get a residence there, or at least get a pro membership, because he plays this golf course so well. If you remember, Molinari and him were just dominating there back in 2018 at that Ryder Cup. But we talk about him this week, and you kind of refer to him just the near misses, like kind of like Will Zalatoris. I went back and just wanted to check to see Tommy Fleetwood's history just in majors, because I knew there was a bunch and I wanted to see how many there were. And it surprised me that he's had seven top fives in majors. And then you throw in the second place here or silver medal here at the Olympics. You just look at, man, these are so many big events that he's given himself opportunities on the back nine. And whether it's not being able to capitalize or have a day like today where Tommy, even in the press conference after, is just like, I played good. You know, when you go out there and make eight birdies and he did make three bogeys, but still, you know, Scotty Scheffler went out and won the golf tournament. And really it just came came down to the 17th hole, which turned out to be a two-shot swing. They're both in the left rough, similar shots. Scottie Scheffler was able to land on the front of the green, give himself 20 feet. And Tommy Fleetwood from the same position hits a good shot. Just came in flatter with less spin, rolls over the back of the green. It was not up against the collar, but enough to where he was thinking about it. I thought the pitch that he hit was very poor. I thought he could have done much better from there. Misses the putt, hit a good putt, just broke more than he thought, makes bogey. And there's the two shot swing that I think inevitably decided who won the gold medal.
And then the third guy on the podium, of course, today, we talked Scotty, we talked Tommy, Hideki Matsuyama, who I believe shot 65 today. I think really Hideki, the story of his week was he was kind of done in by a rough performance on Saturday because he was leading after 2 days and just had a rough round and then goes out and plays great again on Sunday. You know, where are we at on him? We saw him win the Genesis earlier this year that we were just talking about with Xander and Cantlay in that final group. And a guy who's finding some form heading into FedEx Cup playoffs. Like, is this a guy that could be hunting coming into playoff season?
Oh yeah, totally so. And I think Hideki this year, it's been a bit of a resurgence, I feel like, because I feel like maybe the prior couple of years, I just didn't feel like Hideki was the same guy. And this year, I think it was a wake up call, you know, being able to turn the TV off with 45 minutes left in the Genesis broadcast. Cause I mean, Hideki just put on an absolute clinic at Riviera. So actually let's bookmark that in for 4 years for, when the Olympics is at Riviera, that Hideki's had some success there winning at Genesis this year. But, you know, he's had six top tens. I think from watching him over the last couple of years, I've just constantly blown away at how good his short game is around the greens, his pitching, his bunker game. It is on this, it's on another level, and it's really been as good as it's ever been in his career this year. And not that that was an X factor or why he got the bronze medal this year, because I actually think his iron game is what's really come back. We're so known for him, you know, these iron shots where he just doesn't like them. And you're like, oh, God, is it in the water? Is it in the bunker? And it's like 10 feet. And that's the Hideki that we grew up watching and that we have come to love, because he's a monster when he gets rolling, especially for him. He seems to me to be a guy that when he gets a hot putter, and that ball striking's there and how good his short game can be, you know, he's not the longest player in the world, but he's also very much past tour average. And then he's also somewhat accurate with that driver's too. So if he's able to put the ball in the fairway, give himself opportunities, and he was able to do that this week. But you mentioned, Charlie, that Saturday wasn't his best. And I think back to Tokyo, where, you know, he had an opportunity to win a gold medal there. And he is Japan, like golf. Hideki Matsuyama, he is the superstar. He is the guy. So all that pressure and then getting in that crazy playoff for the bronze medal, doesn't end up winning. So he's got the feeling of I want to win a medal at the Olympics, and does that this year with having to avoid a playoff, not having to have to sweat out another playoff, and he's able to take a medal back home to his home country, Japan.
And also, you know, shout out to the Srixon 2-iron, the driving iron, because we saw Hideki with the creamsicle tour design shaft in it, because we saw Hideki striping it all week long. We saw Smiley on social media striping it, and we saw so much of that that I had to go out and order my own. So, you know, we got to get some of those in the bag, man. We're seeing too many good shots with that iron.
You know who else uses that? Scotty.
Scotty's got a Srixon 2-iron in his bag.
That's a Srixon. Oh yeah.
How about that? Yeah. Huh. Don't walk, run to your nearest Srixon and buy the 18 degree 2-iron with the creamsicle tour design shaft in it right now. That was a free ad, so there you go. I guess you're endorsed, so it all comes out in the wash. Just to zoom out a little bit, big picture on Olympics, because you tweeted about this a bunch. We tweeted this from the show account. Like, looking at this leaderboard last night, looking in the early stages today of just the way it was developing, arguably the best Sunday leaderboard we've seen all year long. Even moving to the back nine, all the movement and the action we were seeing, it was just compelling across the board. Every time you were cutting to a different shot, that shot had weight and it was a player mm-hmm. that you knew. Like it was, there was brand value across the board. It was super compelling, thrilling stuff. You know, I want to talk about that for sure. But the place my mind went first was, man, we criticized so much, maybe not criticized, but just we looked at all the PGA Tour signature events this year with limited fields. And our gripe was you get these leaderboards where there's nobody at the top contending. Look no further than Rory pulling away at the Wells Fargo mm-hmm, from Xander. Mm-hmm. And you just, it's just that the field's too thin to have a good chasing pack at the top. And it's like, this was the best case scenario of that, a very limited field. Yet the top 10, even down to 15, were all guys you'd heard of and all guys that had a real chance to win this tournament.
Mm-hmm. And maybe this is what signature events or maybe a smaller tour can be like, where you have leaderboards like this more consistently. I think you've seen bits and pieces of what it could look like with signature events. Have the Sundays gone the way the tour wants or the networks want or the fans want? Probably not. You've had some runaways like you mentioned with Rory or a day like Bay Hill this year where you had this awesome leaderboard and Scotty's like, all right, see ya. Y'all go hit balls on the back nine because this thing's over.
Maybe that's the fix is if Scotty's in contention on Saturday, we just dock him like five shots and we make him come from behind. We have like a gross flight and we have a net flight and we start Scotty. It's like, hey, Monopoly, Scotty, you man. Can win the gross, but go, like the come net's back, still five in players.
Oh man. Yeah, it was, golly, you know, I think signature events, I think they can be exactly like they were today. It was 60 man field and shoot, that's all Scotty's won this year. I think all of his events he's won are signature events. So he's the last full field event I guess that he has won is, man, that our stats department really needs to get hard to work because I don't really know where it was. Probably Phoenix.
Maybe I was gonna say last year.
Yeah, because no, was it a signature event last year? It was.
Oh, it was a single, but were they doing limited last year or was it just, did they, cause golly, now I really got to go back and look.
Oh, you know what? I think it may have been that would be,
I think it may have been listed as a signature or a designated event is what they're calling it last year, but they were not limiting the fields
plus
at the time.
Guys. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So it'd been Phoenix last year, but, Scotty's obviously proven he can beat the best of the best. And, you know, I think this event was just incredible. You know, I am one for really being hard on the Olympics just over the last 3 years. I really feel like I've been banging the drum, like, yeah, the Olympics and golf. I'm not there yet. You know, Tokyo, it was on in the middle of the night. You know, we're watching the, you know, re-air later in the day. It just didn't have the same juice. It's also in Tokyo. The crowds were not the same because of, I believe it was around COVID or after COVID, to where it was limited
attendance.
It was supposed
to happen in 2020 and then they moved it to 2021, but still obviously not
still
a full,
limited. Yeah. It's not the same, right? So I think just, you know, the buzz that this place had this week, there's 30,000 people a day. And I just felt like, all right, if the Olympics in golf is going to work, 72 hole stroke play event, you know, we do that every single week. Maybe we should look at a team type deal with whether it's mixed with male and female or match play, something to make us interested, because I just really struggled with 72 holes actually being, you know, the way to for the Olympics golf for people to care. But after finishing what I felt like was the best viewing event of the year, you know, to me, it had the feeling of this means a lot to these guys. And the only other event that you can maybe compare it to is the one that they're also not playing for money. They're playing for their country, or, you know, for the Ryder Cup purposes, they're playing for a continent. So comparing those two, I think it's like, all right, these guys that, you know, when you get the guys to buy in and really care, and maybe they did care at the last Olympics and maybe I just didn't get the feeling that they did, but this Olympics, you really could tell that these players really had an incredible experience.
Well, it's such a tough one. And it's interesting you bring up different formats too, because I feel like it is when it's good, like today, good, you're like, don't, roll that exact same thing back out. That was, I want to watch that again and again and again. But when it's bad, it's, you know, it's kind of like, why am I supposed to care about this? And I think that, like it's interesting because I look over like track and field and you see, you know, runners and athletes that can do multiple events. You know, you have men who are running in, you know, the 100 meter and the 200 meter, and they're running in, you know, relays, but they're also running like mixed relays. Yeah. And it's hard to have that equivalent of like, hey, we'll do a men's individual stroke play, but we'll also do a mixed team event that feels like the Ryder Cup with men and women. And then we're also going to have the women's competition, you know, it's just, you can only ask them to do one thing unless you want to shrink the length of each of those competitions. You know, I would love to see a mixed competition at the Olympics, simply because we don't see that anywhere else. And I also feel like there's just that element at the Olympics where if you are playing for your country, shouldn't that kind of feel more like a team thing, you know, like where you're all kind of waving the flag together and you have someone alongside? I mean, it's amazing as an American to see Scottie Scheffler on the podium, you know, clearly overwhelmed with emotion for doing something for his country. But it's also, you know, it's a little bit like, yeah, I mean, we see Scottie Scheffler win all the time on tour. And that's largely just Scottie Scheffler up there winning. So I don't know. I mean, because that's maybe more of what I would have said entering the week, but then I watched what I watched today and I was like, yes, more of that, please. Like, I'd rather have that a million times over. I thought the coolest part, and it's a shame that Victor Perez didn't end up on the medal stand.
Yeah.
Cause just seeing the French support and that hard charge on the back nine and just him coming so close, that to me was one of the coolest parts of this competition.
You know, we picked two French players at the beginning of the week.
And hey, how'd yours do?
I took Matthew Pavone thinking like, you know what? That's the guy that we've been talking about this year. And you're like, oh, I'll take Victor Perez. And of course, Victor Perez went absolute psycho on the back nine. He was six under on a five hole stretch from, I believe it was 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, and just gave himself an opportunity, came up one shot short. But Scotty was actually talking, he was saying in the press conference that a bunch of the players were talking that Victor Perez and like Matthew Pavon were getting tiger-like treatments this week. As far as the crowd, they really felt the presence of just, you know, a country getting behind a player, which, you know, Tiger had that support everywhere he went, but that's what they said it looked and felt like. So huge props, by the way, to all the people that showed up to make this a really cool venue and make it really sing on TV, because you could really feel the energy from the crowd. Just epic day. But the one thing that I think you and I should talk about when it comes to Olympics golf, and now that there seems to be that the players care, that the media seems to have a more of an interest in it and feels like it can be something really big. But what we talked about this a little bit in the lead up, in that this golf tournament from a official world golf ranking standpoint was getting 50 points. And if you look at the official world golf ranking, 50 points list on an event that's comparable to that, you look at like Valspar. When I say 50 points, 50 points to the winner. Valspar is also similar to that. And if you go and just glance at the Valspar leaderboard, and then you look at the leaderboard here at the Olympics, they're not the same. So we've got to either find a way to elevate the Olympics to where it's in the same category as signature events, because I just don't see how that what we just watched wasn't at the top echelon of what I feel like professional golf is, which they should be rewarded with rankings. If they're going to rank and give player world ranking points for this,
it's a very fair criticism. It's also like, it's so strange to sit here and have so many conversations about live events with 48 plus players, whatever, wherever they're at now, 52, and talk about how, you know, these signature events, they're too small. We want them to go like 100 players. And then to look at a field like this week, which I think was like 60 to enter the week, and I think maybe two guys withdrew. I might have the numbers a little bit off there, but, you know, not a huge field at all. And say, yes, give that more points. Again, I think it's to a certain degree, like, I'll put my hand up and say, I'm a little bit of a prisoner of the moment because all the cream rose to the top and the best guy showed up. And so winning today's event was a massive, massive achievement. I think there's got to be a happy medium there. It's got to be more than 50 points to the winner. I don't know how many points it is, and I don't know if it's like where it lands against a against a major, against a signature event. It's tough to say, but it definitely, if you have more, and I think what's going to happen too is they're going to kind of springboard off of what we just saw today and really kind of make some changes and adjustments as we kind of, you know, head to the next Summer Olympics, because I think that, you know, this thing started in Brazil in 2016 was the first iteration of this thing. Then you had Tokyo, it was supposed to be in 2020. They ended up being in 2021. So this is like the third time in. I mean, if I remember correctly, back in Brazil, the same guy, Rory, who was, you know, talking after this event about what an amazing experience this was like poo-pooing the idea of playing in Brazil. It's like, this is a fabricated thing.
Well, I think it was the Zika virus. You remember that?
Exactly.
All the guys that were like thinking about having kids were like worried.
Totally.
I don't
blame him for it at all. Like it was funny. I was sitting watching the final round today with my wife, and Amanda was like, so do guys care about this? Like what's the significance of this event? And it's so strange because it doesn't really have any history. And I also want to get into the venue itself, like Golf Nationale, but different than any other golf event we watch, it's not like venue selection is a huge part of it. It's basically like, hey, this is the host nation. Let's look in the greater area and try to find the best course we can find in that area. Mm-hmm. A lot of times you get good options, and I think this was a very good one, but it's not like the venue is this key central piece. It's like, we're going to Paris regardless. We're going to Tokyo regardless. Let's find something there. In Brazil, they had to have Gil Hans come down and build a bunch of courses. So to me, it's not history. It's not venue. I think the thing about it that probably makes it cool is a lot of these kids grew up and they were athletes. And they played a lot of different sports, and they undoubtedly were at home watching the Olympics every year and seeing how cool it was for those athletes in those sports to win a medal and represent their country. And so for these guys now, they're more and more coming around to the idea of, man, it'd be so cool to stand up wearing USA colors on that podium with a gold medal around my neck. And boy, do we see that today with Scottie Scheffler.
You know, and that's you make a great point too, talking about Brazil and just the start that it got, because the golf course, like you mentioned, Gil Hans comes down and builds some courses, and it didn't look good on TV. You know, the fans weren't out there supporting it quite as much. And then fast forward, we already talk about Tokyo. You know, it's a year after, it doesn't have the same buzz. It's a limited type of fan experience. I'm sure it was a great golf course, but now this year you finally had venue, fans, and then buy-in from players. And that's why it was, I think, so successful.
Yeah. And I think I'd love to get your thoughts on Le Golf Nationale, because it's I think I saw Tron Carter tweeting about this, who has been more than vocal about his distaste for Valhalla, and he's certainly entitled to his own opinion. And I think he has some fair criticisms there, but the Scotty wins at 19. Xander won the PGA Championship at 21. You can look at that leaderboard and say, what's the difference? I thought there was just, and we already kind of touched a little bit on it in this earlier in the conversation, but just what did you like about this venue? Like, to me, I thought there was a great risk reward.
Okay.
I thought there, it was just, the whole thing was, it was very interesting. Even if it wasn't a storied venue or a classic venue, I thought it was just, it set up perfectly for dramatic golf, which is what you want in an event like this.
You give guys soft fairways, you give them soft greens, and you give them no wind. It doesn't matter where they're going to play. They're going to take it deep. It's, if you want to play the compare contrast game with Valhalla and Le Golf Nationale, which I don't think is so different, right? You got a golf course that one has all the risk reward, reminds me much more like a Players Championship, where you have to sit up on you just can't take a shot off. Where at Valhalla, you feel like you could take shots off and get away with some. Not to say that it's not a hard golf course, because, you know, I think for most people, it would be a difficult golf course. But the way it played that week with all the rain they got at Valhalla, it was, you know, there's not a ton of slopes around the greens of Valhalla. So there's nothing about that golf course that I felt like was going to make it play firm. And firm enough to really challenge the players. But let's say it had Bermuda greens and it was firm. You know, maybe we're talking a little differently about Valhalla, but the way it's set up, you know, for the PGA this year. They got some rain, you know, just, it felt like it just came down to, you know, who could, who could hit a seven iron the best. And it seemed like Xander was the best at that.
Without a doubt. Well, I think that, you know, obviously I'm smashing success. A few items worth getting in the notes. I think you and I both said in our individual contributions to our shared note, props to Wyndham Clark. He kind of got roasted on the way in and then played that rough first round for making this team above Bryson or any number of other Americans that people would have liked to see there better. And then went on and played a very solid final three rounds, including on Sunday, to kind of, you know, put himself in and around it. So props to you, Wyndham.
Yes, 100%. And I think a lot of people forget how well he played from the U.S. Open last year at LACC to, I mean, it was probably through, gosh, it was, I guess, Players Championship. Let's put the halt on it there. Like that stretch that he played, it was some damn good golf. And his every time I kept watching him, he just kept reminding me of Brooks, you know, just the way that he was carrying himself, how confident he is was with himself and with the media, whether that was right or wrong. He said what was on his mind, and that's kind of what reminded me of Brooks. And then just how he was playing too, it just playing fades and just playing his golf, which was, I tell you, when he had it going, when he drives it well, my gosh, because he's got low 190s ball speed. I think people are talking like him, like he's not an elite player. He is. He just had a tough second half of the year with his golf swing. You've seen bits and pieces of really hot rounds. He saw it on Sunday at the Scottish Open. So there is some good golf in Wyndham, I think, maybe through the playoffs. He's a guy that I got my eye on for one particular week coming up. Yeah, props to Wyndham. He definitely didn't deserve all the criticism. The whole system with the world ranking and how it is, and these live players not getting points, and that's a whole nother debate that we can get into if you want. But I think Wyndham undoubtedly earned his spot the way the system set up, and I thought he represented his country well. Maybe not the first 18 holes, but the last 54 holes really well.
Yeah, I think there are some questions around Wyndham's major record. They're probably fair outside of course, his win at LACC. And, you know, I think it's such a tough one in the game of golf, of course, because it's, I think, you know, people look at that and say, well, he doesn't have the clutch gene, or like, he's never going to play well in high leverage golf, when it could just be kind of what you're saying, where you're going through some swing stuff and it just so happens to coincide with the major week. And that's a really tough scene for you if you're trying to convince people that you're an elite player. I mean, he's done it on numerous other high leverage events, but I mean, I think he'd tell you himself he has to play better in other major events to kind of really earn it. So,
go ahead. That's why Scotty's like, and Xander, what they've done, their level of consistency at the highest level. That's what's so impressive about these two guys, is that every single week they show up and they hit the shots over and over and over again, and they find themselves in the top 10 and not missing cuts. And for a majority of the players that are elite on tour, very few are in this category that these two have put themselves in, where they're just right there every single week. Rory's there as well. Rory just hasn't had the wins to back it up. And Rom's been there over the last couple of years, but now him moving to live, now we just have to play the game, right? It's like, is he playing himself in enough shape to win big events? And that's been the conversation about him today.
Completely bizarre Sunday observation for me. I think Victor Perez looks like the French Wyndham Clark, and or Wyndham Clark looks like the American Victor Perez. Agree or disagree in the comments, please. I could be completely off there. I just was watching. I was like, huh. Something there. There might be something there. So there you go.
I need to see more of Victor. I just need more of him. I just thought, has he had a mustache in his career? I just figured he had. Yeah. No.
He should have one if he doesn't. I mean, I think when you do more Victor Perez, I loved the Victor Perez heater on Sunday. I mean, mainly because he was my Frenchman. God. I was like, let's go. But I mean, I think I want more Victor Perez in my life. He was. I might be mistaken, but I think he was one of those guys that earned their tour cards through the DP World Tour last year and has had a very solid year. And in fact, this is probably
where's he at in the FedEx Cup.
This is look at how seamless of a segue that we're doing right now. We're segueing right into our discussion about the precursor, the finale of the regular season as we head into the FedEx Cup, which is the Wyndham Championship. And so I sent over a list of some guys that are just outside of the top 70, because if we remember last year, we were talking about Justin Thomas. We were talking about Adam Scott. We were talking about Shane Lowry that had to kind of play well to make their way in. And so this year, the list of guys I'm looking at are Victor Perez sitting at 71st. I need to look at a Wyndham field list, which I have not done yet, to be fair. But I mean, I'd assume that a guy that is sitting right there is going to play the Wyndham in an effort to make it in and capitalizing on his momentum of playing well in that final round of the Olympics. Davis Riley at 72nd, which is like, this guy won this year and is still 72nd. That's kind of an interesting sort of scene. Andrew Putnam at 73. Andrew and Lucas Glover at 76 are two that I find interesting as guys who were in the playoff last year, in signature events this year, who are still on the outside looking in. Keith Mitchell at 79. I think it's an interesting one because he's a guy that did not have the benefit of signature events. So, you know, I don't know if there's any thoughts you have on any of those guys or maybe some guys that are inside the top 70 that you're really keeping an eye on this week, you know, to see that final movement of guys that are going to make it in the FedEx Cup. And then, you know, obviously there's a cut to get in, and then there's the all important, you know, play at the FedEx St. Jude to see who can get in that top 50 category to make their way into 2025 signature events.
Well, of the names that you just mentioned, I think the one that I'm probably going to be focusing, watching to see how he plays the most is who you have mentioned at 79. I think Keith Mitchell is probably the most interesting one because he hasn't had a bad year. He's actually played pretty well, just hasn't quite had enough high finishes to get enough points. But he's a guy that if you listen to the last couple episodes, we've really dove into the FedEx Cup distribution points list and how, you know, being in signature events, just being in those events, how important it is to you know, earn your points in those. And for guys that aren't and haven't been in them, like Keith, you know, he's actually played pretty well this year. He's just, you know, he's not playing in events that are giving enough points away. And you could see it in his stats. You can see it in his strokes gained overall. He's in the, you know, he's the top 15 type of player in that category. So that's got to be frustrating as a player, knowing that, man, I just didn't quite get enough bats in these big events to you know, go out at a Pebble Beach in the past in which he's played well and go finish top 10 that week and basically lock yourself up in the top 70. All it takes is 1 week with a good year like he's had, and he just hadn't had the opportunity. So that's the one player I want to see. It's like, can you go out, even though I'm sure you're mad and frustrated as hell with the system, and go out and finish top five here this week at the Wyndham, play yourself in the top 70, and then go play well at St. Jude, play yourself in the top 50. Next thing you know, you're in the signature event. So you can always play yourself into a different category by just, you know, just putting the tee in the ground and going and doing it. But I feel like Keith is in that category of guys of being like, God, man, just I needed some more bats.
Another guy on the official list that I was looking at that I want to bring up at 96, Tyrrell Hatton. We know he's a great fit at Bay Hill. I'm just wondering how you think his game fits Sedgefield.
Dude, I would absolutely pick him this week in one and done if Tyrrell Hatton was there. Oh my God, it would be such a great fit. It's an auto top 10.
A lot of people saying top 10 lock at Sedgefield. You know, 96 is a long way to go to 70, but anything could happen.
God, I hope we have enough listeners that have been on the ride with us in all of our episodes to know that Tyrrell Hatton, that we picked him to play like that week, and they're like, oh wait, he's on Viv. Like, what are we doing?
Yeah, that was definitely that was, to be fair, you
that was me.
Lobbed me one, and I just went right over my head. Yeah. So I mean, it's definitely some interesting names, and I think it's been really cool to see the how that event has transformed, especially with all the added weight this really just this last year and now this year
they
as
gotta
well.
Be pumped,
like,
right?
No, they got to be thrilled. Yeah. I mean, you can't miss it. You know, it's like that's a hard defining line as to who's going to make that top 70 and subsequently who's going to make it a signature event. So it's a thriller.
Yeah. No, I think that event and maybe even RSM at the end of the fall where you got guys' cards on the line and their jobs, those two have been the winners of not being signature events. They actually have something where people want to watch because there's awesome storylines on who's going to be making the playoffs or who's losing their card and who's losing jobs.
Well, I think we've done a solid recap here of the Olympics, a little tease of the Wyndham Championship. I think, you know, maybe we'll find some time the next couple of days to make our one and done picks at Wyndham. Mm-hmm. We're getting close to the end of the season. We got to figure out, I think maybe next year I'm proposing a shift from FedEx Cup points to OWGR points so that we can
The board. Nobody wants OWGR points. That's even like we cover the PGA Tour. We also touch on things that we see in the LIV Golf Tour, but even us, we're not OWGR guys. Like this whole system is just
maybe
out
we can
of
be
whack.
Tugger guys or yeah. Isn't that the other one, the TUGR? Yeah. We'll find a across the board rank system. So that is that, and we'll get you those one and done picks for the Wyndham soon. I just want to know, Smiley, just open questions are open. What would you like to know about me breaking 70 for the first time, my 66? I'll field any question. You know, I'm an open book here. Happy to walk you through hole by hole, whatever you'd like. I'm an open book here.
I had sent a message to the producer of Golf Central to see if they'd have you on as a featured guest to really go in with highlights, you know, on the 12th hole when you're absolutely, you know, crap in your pants. Like, how are you able to stay put and keep going? And it's been really impressive hearing about your round. But I mean, I don't want to say this to put you in a spot right now that I don't want to characterize your round because I wasn't there. I don't know the golf course, but doesn't it seem like this is the time of the year where everyone in your, whether it's your friend group, another friend group, are like, I just shot the best round of my life. It's this time of the year. It's hot. The greens are soft. You play in the morning, they're pure. Are you in that category of guys that career rounds are shot this time of the year because of how maybe receptive the golf course is? Not to take away from a big day.
You know, it's a fair question. And look, I'm happy to kind of get into the details of the course and the setup. We've had a lot of rain in North Carolina recently. but we played in the afternoon, so it was firmed up a little bit. This was at my home club, Hope Valley Country Club. Of course, questions are going to be asked about that because your home course, you should know well. I played from the white tees, hand up. It's 71 rated. It's 130 slope. This was supposed to be just like a fun round. I was a late add. I like played tennis in the morning. It was
white
on a call
tees.
And just like
white
rolled
tees.
Rolled up. I didn't hit any balls, hit two practice putts. Like we're just going to go have a good time, have some fun, enjoy ourselves out there. I'm not here to characterize this as some, like, I'm sure that there are plenty of listeners who are far better at the game of golf than I am. Like, I'm not saying I figured this thing out, although I did Google like North Carolina mid-AM qualifiers in the days that came, you know, like maybe I'm going to be good at golf now. You never know. I'm just a guy with a dream. I'm a guy that's a mid single digits, lowish single digits that had a dream to break 70 and I achieved that dream. And your dream might be different. You might have a dream to break 80 or 90 or 100. I'm just here to talk to you, the listener, the viewer, that are out there dreaming, trying to achieve something. And I'm here to say you could do it. It just, sometimes it just all comes together. Now I was near crapping my pants after 12 holes. And I don't think anything that happened past the 12th hole had anything to do with my golf swing or the quality of golf and everything to do that was happening between my two ears. And I also had a very calm New Zealander in the cart with me, Magnus Ritterford.
That's huge. I imagine
he was a shepherd.
you know, just nurturing you to the finish, just, you know, keeping the conversations light, fun, keeping your mind off of going too low. And this is actually funny, something from the Ireland trip. One of our buddies who's not one of the best golfers in our group is playing with JT on one of the mornings, and JT's like 500 through seven holes. And just all of a sudden he realized how many under he was, like through seven holes. And he was like, oh man, dude, are you, you're 500 through seven holes, like just like boarded it out. And then Jordan's brother, Steven, said, dude, stop. You sit here, you play golf, and you watch. You don't say a word. And I thought that was the funniest thing ever, is that just that some guys just always, there's that one guy on your career low day that just blurts out. It's like, oh man, dude, you're like, what's your low round of all time? Like, how many under are you? And there's always that one guy that it doesn't happen. It's he's normally the guy that doesn't play in the group. He just happens to be there that day. And he's the one that always just, it's just bogey, double bogey. And you're just like, this dude.
it was thankfully the opposite of that. It's a little bit of having a little bit of a baseball background. Like when we got to the 13th tee, it felt a little bit like you're throwing a no hitter, mm-hmm. and everyone like is sitting at the other end of the dugout from you, and they don't want to talk to you, and everyone's getting really, really quiet around your practice swings and shots, and you're like, this is too quiet. Please somebody change what's happening. So I'm thinking way too much. But Magnus had the tunes on point. The cart was very like even keel, calm. And yeah, I mean, there was some big par saves along the way. Like, you know, I think that's they always say on the broadcast, it's not the birdies, it's the big putts you make to save par, mm-hmm, to keep the sure numbers, is. The big numbers, you know. And so it was amazing. It's probably never going to happen again. As noted, I went out today and shot a really sloppy 83 at a public course in Easton, Pennsylvania. And if that's not the game of golf, I don't know what is. I couldn't even be mad. I was like, this is how it goes. So I will say, if I can just make one gripe about the way this system works, is that previous to this round, right? Like I'd started to play a little bit of good golf. I'd shot under par for the first time on my Scotland trip with my dad. And I told Amanda, I was like, hey, like, this is kind of wild. Like, I'm under a 3 handicap for the first time in my life. I'm like a 2.9. This is super cool, but like, I really shouldn't be this low. And then I go out and I shoot this round, and it says the predicted handicap is 1.7. I go, this is amazing, Amanda. Like, I just told you I was under 3 for the first time. Now I'm under 2 for the first time. This is super cool, but like, I should be like a 5. Like, this is not good. I wake up. It's the morning we're supposed to be leaving for Pennsylvania. We've not packed. We've not packed ourselves. Mm-hmm. We've not packed our son. It's just like a total fire drill. And I'm in the kitchen and I get a notification on my phone. And I go, oh my God. Oh no. Oh no. Amanda's like, what? Like, what happened? What? Something happened wrong? Like, we have to cancel the trip. What's going on? I was like, Amanda, they made this exceptional score adjustment on the Gin app. I'm now on 0.7. She's like, I'm going to kill you. But I was like, I don't think you understand, Amanda. Like, there's no chance heading into member guest season that I can play to an 0.7. It's not happening. Like, I can't play to a 3, let alone a near scratch. So if I could just, you know, if anyone out there at the USGA is listening, what are we doing by penalizing people who shoot the best score of their lives by shaving another shot off their handicap? That's ludicrous. Please stop that immediately.
Okay. Also, if we're going to continue griping, I shot 66 as well yesterday.
66 and, bros.
And lost money. So that's always fun. But I'll say that the way our group, we got to figure this out, because somehow, I guess it probably all adds up the same, but I hate it from my perspective, in that the way the Golf Genius thing calculates the handicaps, they calculate everybody's handicap based off of 0 and not off of the best player. So they play me at a +3. And so on the 18th, 17th, and 16th easiest holes, I give one shot back. So if I make birdie, I make par. And I can't stand that, because I would rather give 3 extra shots away to everybody else versus making a score and then oh no, you made a par. And I just think that to me, for somebody who's obviously normally going to be the better player of the group. That's frustrating in these handicap games. And listen, this is my life now. Like I play against handicap. So it's never going to be fair for me unless I just play against good players, which I, you know, if I'm playing for money, I'd prefer to just play for everybody straight up and not have to deal with handicaps. But I like playing with my friends too. And I wanted to somehow be fair. If you go out and I feel like I played pretty well, shoot 66. Honestly, I say played pretty well. Like it was soft. The greens were perfect. The easiest scoring day of all time.
66 this time of year is a really, really good score. That's what I'm hearing people saying.
Like my pro golf self on yesterday would have shot it would have been 59 watch. And oh, I shot hello. 66 and it was like, oh, I'm back. But not really sharp.
So that's actually very interesting because I played in a couple different variations of how they handicap these things. I played in ones where, of course, you spin off the lowest number, the system you're advocating for. I played in some competitions where whatever they decide to make, you know, scratch, that there are guys that have to give a shot or two back relative to their course handicap, wherever it is. I've also played in ones that are interesting where they do like a half shot on certain holes.
I like half shots. Half shots is way, way better.
It's great, right? Instead of it, you know, you getting an odd number of shots on one nine.
It's
gotta be
match play, right? It's match play when it does it. Exactly. But it's great.
It's so good because then it's like, all right, you can make a four and beat me, or you can make a five and 100%. Lose to me if I make a four. Just, you know, it's a much fairer system. What I'm curious about in this equation is, because I keep looking you up on Gen, I think the last score you posted was like 2013 and you're like a plus five. It's so like when are we getting updated scores into the Smiley Kaufman Gin account?
I don't think I'll ever plug it in. I don't think I'll ever plug scores in. I think I'll just play as a, plus
three
four,
feels fair.
Plus four.
Yeah.
And I'm fine with that. I just don't
want to give shots back. That's fair.
Well, for however many years golf and a score, I would always judge myself based on what I shot. And now, you know, I just keep score on days that it's good and days that are bad. I just don't feel like I want to be grinding for a 73 or 74. I just don't care enough to post a 74 or 75 or a day when it's really bad. Like, I just don't want to go home and have it ruin my day and just go home and be like, I'll go figure it out. You know, it's not a score where everybody can go and log into my Gin thing and look me up and see like, oh, he shot this today.
That's fair. That's
and
fair.
So I just feel like I did that long enough. I don't really care to post scores. So whatever I do shoot, it's like good days are great. Bad days are whatever. I'm on to the next one and don't really care because I did that long enough playing bad and having to post scores. It's just not fun.
This is great. This is also hilarious because I feel like this reminds me of trying to get my wife, who played collegiate soccer for Virginia Tech, to care about our rec leagues in DC, and her being like, Charlie, this does not matter to me at all. Like this, we're playing against like people who are drinking beer before, after, and during the games. It's like, yeah, but it's like, no, it doesn't matter. In the same way, I completely understand. You've won on PGA Tour. You don't care about plugging scores into a Gin app, but nevertheless,
I'm here for the grind. Not, I am here for the grind.
You're
here
for the grind, but you're not here to give shots back for a competition. So fair. Listen, if you made it this long into the episode, thanks for doing it. And especially if you work for the USGA, just take it into consideration. All right. I think we've given you a lot of really good feedback here and it's worth considering. So, if anyone wants to play for money, it won't be with me for a very long time until I can kick out 20 scores. But thank you all for watching and listening this far. And Smiley, do you have any final thoughts before we close this thing out? USA.
That's it, baby.
USA.
Come on, Scotty. Way to bring it home.
USA. Very good. Very good. Well,
actually, final thought.
Okay. The
six biggest events, Americans won.
Oh, how about that? You're talking about six biggest events in golf or the six biggest events in the Olympics?
No, in golf.
That's right. Four majors, players in the Olympics.
Yeah.
And the Shriners. Who won the Shriners this year?
We don't know yet.
That's right. It's in the fall. It's in the fall. Stay tuned. The seventh event. Yeah. Very good. Well, I guess look out for some Wyndham one and done picks for us on social media and for another guest dropping the feed soon.
Yeah.
And with that said, thanks so much for watching and listening. And we'll talk to you very, very soon.